Who the bloody hell's that?
Morning, Ange.
Ah, Anthony. How are we?
I'm really well. How are you?
Come on in.
I will do, thank you.
Did that sound staged?
Just a little.
No,
it's
fine. Yeah.
I'm going to embrace the whole lounge pant thing next time. I'm going to put my University of New Hampshire lounge pants on.
You should indeed.
You're listening to The Corona Diaries, a sometimes random and often irreverent attempt to understand the psyche of singer Steve Hogarth.
Where is he? There's a little sort of bit of green next to him as well.
And what else are you looking for? Green and what?
Well, it's this little fella with the... He looks like he's wearing a bear skin, but he's probably just... He's just got big hair. Well, it could be a woman.
I think it's difficult to tell the gender. It's probably quite fluid, isn't it, in that respect?
Yeah, no, but you would think that having had a good look at him or her with his orange and his beehive hair, well, there's a green blob either side of him. It should be obvious. Oh, there he is. I've found him. He's there, isn't he? Or is he?
We're going to have to break off for a second while you walk around the table.
He's definitely there. I've found him.
Are you sure?
Yes. He's above the yellow cabs.
Right.
Hang on, just give me a second.
Yeah, I'll give you a second. You have to take your headphones off now.
I'm going to put this in whilst studiously not picking another piece up.
Yeah, yeah. If you're hearing lots of background noise now, folks, it's because... Your favourite singer is now walking round my kitchen table to put a jigsaw piece in. We should have started recording about 15 minutes ago, but this one particular piece of jigsaw, it's of Times Square, just for those, for a bit of context. In fact, we'll put a picture on Instagram so you can see what it's going on. But, oh, good grief, the drama on this jigsaw piece has been unbelievable.
There it
so
is.
You got it? Was it the right one?
Definitely.
Yeah? You happy? Ooh, hang on a minute. It might be a refusal. There might be a refusal.
No, I'm coming.
I bet there's nothing to stick it into, is there?
No, I'm on another bit.
Are you?
But I shouldn't.
No, you should. We're supposed to be, we're 1 minute 56 seconds into recording.
Are we?
Yeah.
I've got to move on. That went on there. Right.
Right, you're coming back. Put your headphones back on.
That's four I've put in now.
That clank was the jigsaw box.
Four in under 3 hours.
Going back on the table. Hello.
Hello, Anthony.
Hello, Steve.
We're in the same
In the same room. Hey. You, me and the jigsaw.
We're in Heckman Dwight.
We are in Heckman Dwight.
The lovely view of the hills.
Indeed, those hills. Them thar hills in Heckman Dwight. At our kitchen table with a jigsaw of Times Square.
We have, just like Laurel and Hardy. Did you see Laurel and Hardy with the jigsaw when he's getting married? He's getting married. And, anyway, the wife's in the church waiting for him. And Stan opens the jigsaw and he gets pulled into it.
Well, his fiancée, isn't it?
She's waiting at the altar for him to show up.
He's doing a jigsaw.
They both got stuck into them.
Lovely.
It's a classic.
So you message me. Because what normally happens in the TCD world, folks, what normally happens is on a Monday morning, one of us messages the other to say, normally, today or tomorrow, we pick a day, and then it's normally tennis, isn't it?
Tennis.
Yep. Tennis. And you message to say, how do you fancy doing it face to face?
I did. You're not the first person I've said that to.
No, I'm sure I'm not. How are you fixed for today or tomorrow? And I said, well, today's a bit tight, tomorrow's great, and here we are.
Here we are in Heckman Dwight, in Anthony's lovely home.
And we've just been out for a long lunch, haven't we?
We have. It was a longer lunch than I thought we were going to have.
Oh, a lot longer.
It was...
Well, we got chatting.
Oh, we did, yeah. Yeah, that's right. I gave you a list of my problems. That's a cosy 4 hours.
It's a good job that we didn't charge for parking. I would have had to nip out and put another ticket on. But we've had a nice lunch up at the Rusty Bull.
Yeah, we have. We haven't solved any of them. But,
no, we haven't.
But you've heard about them.
No, I know about them all now.
Yeah.
Well, I think I know about them all.
Well,
hang on.
Yeah, I think you're in at about 50%.
Right, okay, oh, bloody hell. That's another lunch then. Don't order the fish next time.
Well, those are the ones I've forgotten.
So we're here. So we're here. And if you've not worked out by now, there's a jigsaw on the table and H has been doing bits of the jigsaw.
I have done a bit. You've done very well, actually, Anthony. I've contributed barely anything.
Well, yeah, because I only opened it this morning.
You didn't. Oh, that's all right, then. You lie. You're lying.
It was worth it. It was worth it just to see your face.
Well, I was going to be really impressed.
Well, I've sat in the chair waiting 5 minutes while you found this piece. But you found it now. That's good. You can relax.
Yeah.
So have we got any idea what we're talking about today?
Yes, of course you have.
Have I? Oh, right. Okay, fine. Well, one thing I do need to mention to you. I do need to mention this to you. Tim Glasswell's been in touch.
Oh, yeah.
Now
he does the Europeans website.
I think he does do the Europeans website. Mm. And I've not actually... I've communicated with Tim, but I've never spoken to him. So how did you get to know Tim then, originally?
I didn't really. I just sort of heard that he was doing a Europeans website.
Right.
And sort of over the years, once in every blue moon, his name crops up in conversation. I might have done an interview with him, but I think I did. I either did one or I said I would and didn't.
You didn't.
But either way, I remember his name.
Right. Well, he got in touch because we mentioned your keyboards again.
Ah.
And you thought you'd sold them to somebody.
Blue Weaver.
Okay. Now, he knows Blue. And where does Blue Weaver come from?
He's the keyboard player in the Bee Gees.
Right.
And he was the reason he came into conversation was because in the diary last week when I was in Nantes, after I nearly got done over by the nutter on the tram, I went back to my room and watched a documentary on the Bee Gees, which at various points interviewed Blue Weaver while I was sitting there going, that bastard got all my keyboards because he bought them off me when I was totally skint and he bent me over. So is Tim saying that's not true?
So is Tim... How did you know what was coming there? So Tim had obviously then been in touch with
Blue Weaver.
He's got a friend of a friend who knows Blue Weaver.
Right.
And he's asked him about the keyboards.
And he said, I've never bought any keyboards.
So the reply from Blue Weaver came,
yeah.
I don't really remember buying those from Steve.
Right.
I bought my Mini Moog back from Miami and Wurlitzer, and I don't recall ever having a Jupiter 8. This would have been in the 80s, so my head was clear then, but you never know.
Oh. Well, my head was clear in the 80s, well, certainly the early part of. Well, I don't know. I'm doubting myself now.
All it took was a third party to interject.
Well,
it?
He would have remembered that Mini Moog. So if he hasn't got that, then God knows who I sold him to. I barely heard of Blue Weaver apart from the fact that he sold him some keyboards,
which he now clearly didn't.
Well, unless he's even more shot away than I am.
Right, okay.
Do the maths.
Right, because how old are we thinking Blue Weaver is?
Well, he's, Bee Gees, loads of hits. California, 80s,
okay. Right,
okay. Tons of drugs.
Right, okay.
My money's on him being even more shot away than me, but who can say?
Right, so your response to Tim is basically, thanks for finding out, Tim. Not quite convinced that Blue Weaver's got a clue what he's talking about. I think in this instance, I'm the adult in the room.
Yes.
I like that. And I like the confidence of it as well. Because your face is saying something different to your mouth here. Just a little bit of something different to your mouth.
Well, I'd always thought I'd sold all those to Blue Weaver. He didn't come, though, himself.
Right.
I think he sent an emissary round to pick them up.
Something papal?
No, they were black.
I thought emissaries had something to do with the Pope.
Is it only Josh and Anthony?
Was it only Josh?
Anthony, Josh and you.
You're Joshing. Right,
Anthony, Josh and you.
Which then throws a different thing on, which is, at some point then, should we ask... You're still playing with jigsaw pieces,
aren't
you? No,
you just get on with it.
I'll carry on. You're sorting out my jigsaw pieces. Yeah, you're just looking at the bottom. Yeah, I didn't know you could multitask.
No, I can't. I stopped
it. Stop there. So are we, at some point, should Tim come and jump on the podcast at some point? Just tell us a little bit about... Is it called the Rainbow Rooms, the Europeans website?
Yes, it is. Yes. It is called the Rainbow Room. And it would be lovely to have him on, yeah. Even if I need to try and get at the bottom of where I sell my keyboards to. In case I can get them back.
Because actually, if anybody should know, Tim, theoretically, you know... Because, I mean, running a website like that is in one breath, is a really nice thing. In another breath, it's kind of stalking, isn't it, really? I mean, he wants to know everything he possibly can about you.
He must be an enthusiast, yeah, of the Europeans and its... And its output.
And its output. Right. Yeah. So maybe he might know. He might have traced down.
Yeah. Well, it was a very distinctive mini-moog because I'd stripped it down. They're sort of made this sort of natural rosewood finish. And I stripped it back to the, you know, stripped the finish off it and stripped it back to the bare wood, sanded it, stained it black and then refinished it so that it was shiny and it was black, but it was, you could see the grain in it as well. And there
like are that kind of 80s furniture.
There aren't any of them around. I mean, you've got to do it yourself. They were never sold like that. So, and as I said in the diary piece, when I met Mark Kelly, I was amazed to find he'd done exactly the same thing with his own mini MOOC. So it must be a strange behaviour tick that the two of us had.
Has he still got his?
I think he might have.
Mm. Is he a hoarder of keyboards, Mark?
Not as much as he should be. He shares the same bitter regret at having sold his Jupiter 8 that I did, because he had one and he sold his. And they're worth a fortune now. And I'd sold mine, and that's a shame. So we'd both sold our Jupiter 8s. He's not much of a hoarder because he had a Hammond organ at one point, back in the sort of Brave days, and he sold that. He has been known to cut quite a few in half.
Yes.
I came in one day to see him with a hacksaw, sawing one of his keyboards in half. And when we all said, "What are you doing, Mark?" He said, "Oh, I'm rack mounting it." Right. How did that go? It was never right afterwards, put it that way.
You see, even from the outside looking in as a guitar player, I would turn around and go, "Surely that's not how it works."
No. No, not exactly.
No.
I think he had some issues. There were a few fundamental things he overlooked whilst sawing his keyboard in half and taking the bits out and putting them in another box. It was never quite right after that. He'd obviously missed something.
No, I believe that was one of his... Wasn't that one of his Korg ones? What were they called?
Karma. Yeah, he put a Karma in a box. And it did very strange things after that.
Okay. Well, perhaps ought to leave that there, didn't we, really?
He'd be the first to admit it. And it's his birthday.
Oh, yes, that was the other reason. We were going to say hello to Martin. Happy birthday, weren't we?
Happy birthday, Mark.
In fact, you arrived and said you'd sent him a birthday message.
I did. It was the first thing I did when I woke up this morning.
Which is really nice.
Well, yeah. We've had our ups and downs, Mark and I, but we're very kind of thick at the moment. So I'm hoping we can return to ourselves.
Do you think this is the future now for you and Mark?
Yeah.
Good.
Let's be positive.
I think I've no reason not to be. He'll have you out jogging next.
No, that's not the future for me, Mark.
No. On things to do with the future, and the only other bit of... Because I've not really actually looked at the... I've not looked at the patron notes this week. I've not seen who's said what about what. So haven't had a great deal of feedback from people. But Sarah Golding Keane, who obviously we talked about last week, has been in touch to say it is okay for you to call her SARS.
I saw that. Yes. I kind of thought it was. That's why I did call her SARS. I wouldn't have called her that out of nastiness or devilment even, had that not been a resolved thing. I've got a feeling I ran into her outside the front of Farmer Smith Apollo, actually, right, when we did that last time. I went out the front. It was about, I don't know, it was about 4 PM or something. And there was a handful of people out the front already. And I thought, I'm going to go and hang with the Pontus. So I walked around, said hello to them all. And Sars was one of the ones out the front I had a little chat with. And I think it was at that point she told me it was all right. I could carry on calling her Sars. No hard feelings.
Right. Well, that's good, because she's clearly not said I can. So I need I need to carry on being very careful.
You might have to be careful.
But she was definitely pointed out it was okay for you to do it.
Hmm.
So I think that gets us to the end of the various bits of housekeeping that we need to this week's housekeeping. Well, I mean, you have to keep on top of these things.
Well, there was a few comments from Helen as well about the the ins and outs of teaching a computer to play snooker.
There was, and quite detailed, actually.
She said there's some way off that ever being a thing.
A thing. Yeah, she didn't mention darts, though, did she? I think darts, she didn't mention far darts. More chance with
I've
darts.
Just got to see that. Yeah!
Oh, that was a good one. Any more vowels you'd like to get out? You sneezed while we were in the restaurant, and you sneezed 4 on the bounce. I've never seen anybody do that.
Oh, I once sneezed 32 times in
on
a row. Yeah, when I was younger.
Right.
And by the 32nd one, I was laid on the floor. It really debilitates you. Yeah.
Right.
10 is knackered. 32 is life-threatening.
Where's that come from?
Because I'm allergic to stuff. I've got a very sensitive nose.
Right,
always have had.
Right, okay.
Where did that come from, my sensitive nose? I don't know. But, I've always been allergic to cats and dust and certain animals.
Now, to be fair, we used to have cats, but I'm assuming because they've been dead for about 4 years that you're okay, because otherwise you would have walked in and gone...
You'd think so, yeah.
It's been a long time.
Yeah, I shouldn't think it's that. I think it's my sister Jill's dog.
Right.
Because she's got a spaniel, a black and white spaniel.
Oh, yeah, you see.
That's a bit bonkers, called Dottie. And I've been living with Jilly for the last couple of days, and the dog. I really like the dog, but I feel my eyes burning and my nose fizzing whenever I'm around it. So I think I'm a little bit allergic to it.
Right. So it's definitely not here then, which is good. Because I didn't think about that, you know, before you walked in.
No.
I didn't think about whether there'd be a thing with...
I always forget to ask. Always, always forget to ask.
Yeah. Well, I've forgotten we've had cats. I mean, we did have cats, but I mean, he's on. Well, to be fair, they're still here. They're on the shelf in the garage next to me soldering iron. Because we've never actually worked out where to spread the ashes.
Oh, right. So they are cremated. They're not
No, they're not. It's not 101 Uses of a Dead Cat. Do you remember that book? It's not one of them. I'm not keeping two chisels in the back end of a dead cat.
All right.
And before the cat lovers come on, I am a cat lover, so I'm allowed to say that kind of stuff.
Still here.
You know, it's all fine. But they are still here.
I didn't get my foot stuck in one on the way in.
No, you didn't. Oh, grief, that's the door ringing. Hang on two seconds, folks. We're gonna pause for a second. Let's check it's still recording. Oh, it's still recording. We've paused and depaused, and it's still recording. Sorry about that. I had an Amazon delivery. Apologies, folks. Yeah. It was a Thunderbolt dock. Not that he wanted to know that. But
gave him a hard-on as well.
It has. It's very, very impressive. There's a woman on Instagram that reads jokes, right, puns more than jokes.
Yeah.
And then basically the clips are of her, they flash the joke up on screen, and then she gets, there's like the nanosecond while she gets the joke, and then she just laughs, and it's really, really lovely.
Oh, right.
But some of these jokes are amazing. Where do you find a dog with no legs?
I don't know, Anthony.
Exactly where you left it. I quite like that.
Jamaica. Tanzania.
Where were we?
Well, we were talking about Helen pointing out that you couldn't program a computer to play snooker. Right. Had we moved on from there?
I'm not quite sure, because we're both struggling with this short-term memory thing, aren't we?
Well, I certainly am.
And then you've been and entertained yourself a bit more with my jigsaw, haven't you?
I can remember that there's two of us here.
There are definitely two of us here.
It's not like the time when I'd eaten the dope and I couldn't remember anything beyond the end of my nose.
No.
Everything was falling away to nothingness.
No, I'm happy to confirm that you're not smacked off your tits.
Thank you.
It's fine. So, at some point, because we've got through our bit of housekeeping, at some point we need to start to work out when we're going to talk about Fear. Because the next thing on our list of albums is to actually talk about Fear. The only two albums we haven't actually talked about are that and An Hour Before It Starts, to my knowledge.
Have we talked about Marbles then?
Yeah, we did. We had everybody in as well. Meeks came back and did a Marbles episode for us.
Of course he did.
So we've definitely done that.
Yes. Yeah.
So we could start today by having a little bit of a pre-Fear conversation.
Okay.
But I think what we talked about and said was we'd try and get at least one or two members of the band to come in and talk a bit about Fear, because it should be in everybody's memory.
Yeah, probably some more than others, and I might be one of the others.
You might be one of those, yeah. But before we go there and start talking about stuff in detail, and maybe we'll have to break it down and maybe work out who we talked to about what, but before we start, as we always do with these kind of things, why don't we go back to what was the world like just before you started? Where were the band in terms of career trajectory, in terms of, you know, you'd come off Sounds That Can't Be Made.
That was it.
Then you'd done Friends from the Orchestra.
Was that before Fear?
Yeah.
Right.
That was the last thing we spoke about. So you'd done Friends from the Orchestra.
Gosh, was it?
And then we were going to Fear.
Were we? So we didn't do Fear and then Friends from the Orchestra.
You've now got me worried.
I've got a feeling we did that.
The other way around.
Yeah, because I tell you, definitely because, I'll tell you for why, because when we were recording the New Kings, I'd got a bee in my bonnet about putting a quartet on it. And we had a quartet play the intro of New Kings, but it wasn't the Follies. It was a quartet that Dave Greggs put me onto.
Mm-hmm.
They came into the Racquet Club, and they were really good, and played the front of the New Kings. And so I think the Follies must have appeared once the album was out, when we came to tour Fear. I think that was the point at which I must have run into Nicole in Sweden doing the Isildur Spain album. In fact, not doing the album, but doing one of the live events. And she at that point was part of their quartet. And that's how we had the conversation about her saying she had another quartet and, we're looking to do a bit of rock and roll. And I made a note of her number. And I think when we came to tour Fear, that was the point at which I hauled them in.
So I'm now worried that we've talked about Fear, but I can't remember talking about Fear.
But I think we have talked about Fear.
Have we?
Well, I don't know.
I can't remember.
I think somebody wrote in the comments that we talked about Fear.
Okay, so let's talk about An Hour Before It's Dark.
Well, why not?
Yeah, let's do that then.
Yeah, blimey, An Hour Before It's Dark. Well, that was the lockdown album.
Mm.
That was the album that I vowed wouldn't be about the pandemic. Because I figured everyone else would be writing about that. Because, you know, we were all locked down. It was all so weird. And I thought, well, whatever I do, I mustn't write about this because it's going to be old hat by the time it comes out and everyone's going to have already written about it. And then somehow I couldn't keep it out, you know, whenever I tried to express anything. Of course, it was expressed through the lens of being locked down and everything that was going on. So it was almost impossible to write anything that was in any way honest or true without referencing it. And so, you know, I think Be Hard on Yourself came out of the environment and, you know, Greta Thunberg, but it also came out of, you know, that feeling of, you know, wearing the hair shirt that we were all collectively wearing during the lockdown. You know, denial, denying yourself freedom and an ordinary sort of normal way of life and having to completely rethink how you might live and the general weirdness of that. And reflecting on that, and then, you know, Reprogram the Gene came out of that. And I've gone and done it again because my sister's having her genes reprogrammed even as we speak. And I've already written the song. So it's funny how these things seem to catch up with me every time I open my mouth and talk about them. But Reprogram the Gene was really about invincibility. I want to be invincible. I want this, I want that. It was about the importance of the self, which in a way so was Be Hard on Yourself. Was about trying to think of everything as bigger than you rather than you being bigger than it. I don't want to be a boy, I don't want to be a girl. You know, and all the stuff about gender that was in the news and, you know, trans issues and whether a boy's always a boy or whether a boy can be a girl and all of this. What was that woman who wrote Harry Potter?
J.K. Rowling.
All the J.K. Rowling-ness, all that brouhaha was probably fluttering about the back of my mind. And it Reprogram the Gene sort of ends up with a little rallying cry for the planet as well, doesn't it? I want to be a friend of the earth. Let's all be friends of the earth. I don't want to be food for the trees. You know, I don't want to be dead and buried. I want to be invincible. And I think that had come out of the pandemic as well and being sort of newly sensitive to my own mortality and everybody else's. You know, you turned on the news and all you heard about was how many people were dying. Or in hospital. So Reprogram the Gene was just about the fact that we are to some degree invincible and we can fix anything. And, you know, we did fix that in the long term. I mean, it took a while, but we did. And a vaccine was developed and we're all still here to, well, you know, the lucky one's still here to tell the tale. I'm still here to tell the tale. I've driven over here today listening to a climate scientist saying that we really are in dire straits right now. And that all the curves, the theoretical curves that they drew 10 years ago, about where the Earth might go in terms of warming and the consequences thereof. You know, they drew a best-case scenario, a kind of median, and a worst-case curve, and we're on the worst-case curve. We're still on it. So any of the naysayers at that time couldn't have been more wrong.
Mm.
You know, it wasn't scaremongering. It was probably quite measured what was being predicted. So we're living in scary times. We really are. That kind of made its way quite a lot onto the album, because I could see a link, at least metaphorically, if not something that could be scientifically proven, I could see a link between the damage we've done to the planet and these pandemics, because these pandemics are really a consequence of globalization. You know, some nasty illness breaks out in a province of China, and it's on your breakfast table in 3 weeks' time, which at one time it never could have been. But everything is everywhere, not just in the sense of the internet, but it, physically everything seems to be everywhere now at once, you know, or within a very short space of time, somebody sneezes in London and someone catches a cold in Sydney.
I'm now getting concerned because you've just sneezed in my kitchen.
Yeah, well, no one is safe.
And there's only me here.
But the whole of Heckmondwike will be in trouble.
He's going to be in trouble. Well, having started off by making the huge faux pas of forgetting that we spoke about fear, and now I've started to think about it, I think we did about 5 episodes. So I can't believe how that's gone by. But I've also can't believe that I got my albums the wrong way around. But let's forget that for a minute.
I can't believe I got them the right way around.
Well, no, there is that as well.
We're both in shock.
Yes, yeah. But actually, here's a question that's never been asked around about an hour before it's stock or around the album, because it was this is a consequence of the pandemic. The first time we sat down to record what would become the Corona Diaries, which, by the way, was never going to... We didn't know it was going to be called the Corona Diaries when we first sat down to record, because at that point, there wasn't a pandemic. I mean, we sat down just at the point where it was being talked about, but we didn't know it was going to be to the extent that it was. I mean, 2 weeks later, we were locked down, but we didn't know that when we first sat in your kitchen. What was on Marillion's radar for then? Was the album still on the radar, or was the album then a consequence of what happened next? I mean, were you due to go out and tour that year? What? Can you remember?
No, the album was absolutely on the radar. We got very lucky in the sense that an awful lot of our fellow artists had to cancel entire tours and lost loads of money. We'd got nothing booked. We were at the stage, we were really at that stage with that album that we're at now with the forthcoming one, which is right at the very, very beginning, where we've cleared the decks of all live work for, you know, the best part of a year, if not more, to give us time to jam and faff about and take as long as it takes to make a record. So we were right at the beginning of that when I think the virus was already raging in Italy really badly. I was looking at lots of
You're looking at a cat now, aren't you? He won't come in. It's not ours.
It's not ours.
It's not coming in. No.
Right. Okay.
It's far more mobile than ours are.
There's no one you nailed to a wall that's got away.
No.
Oh, okay.
We're a thoroughfare here. Our back garden's a thoroughfare for about 10 cats. You're all right. You're fine.
So I'd got Italian friends who were sending me videos of people walking through a completely deserted Venice, which was spooky. Half of northern Italy was locked down at that point. But there was still that feeling of, maybe it won't come here, or maybe it won't be so bad here. And I think that was where the stage we were at when we started the Corona Diaries, where we weren't perceiving it as necessarily something that was inevitably going to affect us the way it did. And, I mean, love or hate Donald Trump, he was actually busy closing the borders of the US whilst everybody was, probably for the wrong reasons, but he was busy doing that while we were all going...
Well, he did get elected on his desire to close the border.
Well, yeah, Yeah, he probably will next time as well. But God knows what he's trying to keep out. So at that stage, we were most definitely planning to spend the whole year in the studio. And then it wasn't very long after that that it all started kicking off in England. And, you know, then the government, a bit too late, they started off with the let the bodies pile high.
They did.
Take on it.
The herd immunity.
The herd immunity. Yeah, you know, okay, so 10,000 people might have to die, but that'll be all right. And then, of course, it just carried on, didn't it? And then they realised they dropped a clanger, and I think they locked down about 3 weeks after they should have. And
that, yeah, about that.
The consequence of that was a massive amount of corpses. Yeah. Otherwise, would have still been people. Well, I guess it's easy to be wise after the event, but I don't know who they were or weren't listening to.
Well, we'll ultimately, when the inquiry finishes off, we might get an idea, but I guess we'll have to wait and see. So, because timing wise, I mean, we're sat now early April. We sat in your kitchen early March. We locked down finally around about the 20th, 21st of March, something around about there. So it was two weeks later. So to your point, it's exactly the same situation, because you would have known then you'd cleared the decks, because you'd have known in March you'd got nothing coming.
Yeah,
we had. So it would have been the album. So the only thing that, I guess then what we're saying is that album could have gone in a different direction in terms, lyrically, certainly.
Oh, it definitely would have, had the pandemic not happened. I think the elements of looking after the planet and trying to deny yourself certain luxuries that you'd got used to, I think those would still have been in there. But it'd have all been framed in a different way. Murder machines wouldn't have existed.
Or reprogram the gene probably wouldn't have existed, would it?
Not in the form it ended up. No, and
care
may have, half of care may have existed, and the second half, you know, the angels on Earth section certainly wouldn't have existed, because that was written, you know, on the fly as I looked at the newspaper and saw the picture of the mural of the nurse on the wall. So that was inspired totally in the moment by a news story, so that wouldn't have happened. No one would have painted that picture. No one would have taken the photograph the picture was painted from. So that wouldn't have happened. But my friend Conrado had had all the chemo for the tumors in his back. My Mexican friend, and so the maintenance drugs would still have been kicking around, but at what form of song?
Or whether it even would have landed into anything.
It might not have landed.
Yeah, because there's no way of. Because obviously we didn't talk about this at the time, because I guess there was so many other things to talk about, which seems like a weird way of putting it. But, you know, we started with Strange Engine as the first one that we did, and we talked about that song specifically, but then we went into a load of the other bits of, you know, your backstory and what have you. But actually, where were you as a band in the whole Following Fear thing? Because, you know, Fear had been such a deal, had had such great reviews, had taken you on a journey that took you to the Albert Hall and took you to a whole raft of different venues and took you to a, you know, so to a certain extent, you've got it now, because you're now following up two albums like that. At that point in time, you were following up one album, you know, absolutely at that level, and certainly an album in an album in Sounds That Can't Be Made that, you know, was a thing as well. So same sort of feeling now?
Absolutely.
Trepidation?
Absolutely. It's always been the same. We set out with each new piece of work to make the best thing we've ever made, if not the best thing you could ever imagine being made. That's the get-go aim of the process. And so it's always, for me, it's always extremely daunting, to the point of being terrifying, because I never know if I'm going to be able to do it. I don't know how to write songs consciously. I've got absolutely no idea. And the only thing that keeps me off the roof is the solid fact that I've written so many.
Yeah.
And so I must be able to
do it, because you've done it.
But I don't know how to do it in the sense that there's ever been a formula, you know, how to do this, C, F and G, bung a middle eight in, you know, you need a hook, stick something with a girl's name in, can't go wrong, bang. Or, you know, descending bass line, doom, 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 doom. You know, they're all sort of formulas, and there are roots into a lot of standard songs. And when I hear songs on the radio, I find it hard to enjoy them a lot of the time, because I can hear where it's come from. I'm kind of jaded enough and old enough to know, oh, well, they've nicked that from there, and oh, that's nicked from there, and oh, that's a bit of that. And so we won't do that, you know, because we feel we ought to be better than that. But that doesn't leave you with much. It leaves you with a vacuum. It leaves you with that, well, how on earth do you proceed? How can we proceed?
Where do we even start?
Where do we even start, yeah. And, of course, that's made worse if you're following up a piece of work that you're very proud of or that's been very, very well received. I guess that makes it worse, but it doesn't make it much worse, because it's bad enough to start with, because you're always trying. You know, if our last album had died on its arse and nobody liked it, it wouldn't make writing this one any easier. We'd still be starting out with on the premise of, let's make the best album we can possibly make. You know, let's make the best one we've ever made. And we've done that with everyone, and it's up to other people to decide to what degree of success we achieved that. But that's always been the starting point, and that's what's so damn scary. But we'll go in the studio and we'll jam, and I've been writing some words lately. I've written two or three things that are not without merit, that might, you know, that'll be grist to the mill when we get stuck into jamming. So, if you'd have asked me, I don't know, even 6 weeks ago, if you'd have said, well, you know, have you written much lately? I'd have said, no, nothing. I know I've got stuff. I've got stuff on the shelf, and I've got a few things kicking about. That some are strong, some are good, interesting statements. But I've not written anything for ages. But I actually have written a few things, so we'll see if I'm able to use them when we get down to jamming. So I'm not totally pessimistic. I'm quite hopeful that some good things will come out of the process. And I think because Pete's been torn in half and stitched back together again and out of commission, I think there'll be a rush of energy when we get back in the studio, because we'll all be really chuffed that he's there. He'll be chuffed that he's there. And it won't feel like, oh, here we are again. It'll feel like, here we are again, you know. So that'll be nice. I think there will be an energy when we get back together, and a kind of relief and a freshness.
So with an Ad For It Start then, because that's different in terms of the fact that when you did get in the studio, it was under a very specific set of conditions, because it was the first part of lockdown lifting effectively that allowed you to go back in. Did that change anything? Did it feel exactly the same? I mean, you're kind of cocooned in your own little spaces in Racket anyway, aren't you? So I suppose it
was totally different in the sense that Steve wasn't around. Mm. He'd absented himself from the process because he was worried about... He felt that he was in a high-risk category, you know, a bit overweight and a bit diabetic. And if he did catch it, he was in deeper shit than if we did. And I think he was... See, the thing was, at that time, nobody quite knew how frightened to be.
Yeah.
It was really hard to know.
Well, especially because we were measuring it in mortality, weren't we? It's like, you know, I mean, it's the same as a conflict in that respect. The only update you get every day was how many people have died.
Yeah. So that's scary anyway. Yeah, you look
exactly,
at it.
Yeah.
And you think, I don't want to be food for the trees, man. So he absented himself and said, look, I don't feel comfortable coming in. And we found one another up and said, well, how do you feel? You know, I said, well, I don't mind, you know, because we're all in opposite corners of quite a big room anyway. Mm. We work on headphones. We'll just have to not have any water cooler moments, man. You know, we'll have to put the kettle on one at a time instead of hanging about together in the kitchen. And so we did just that, and we even, where possible, came into the room through different doors, given the option, because there's two or three different doors in the live room. So we're coming in through different parts of the building and working at different corners of the room. And, of course, once you've got your headphones on and a mic in front of you, you can communicate as though you're sat at a table anyway.
Yeah.
You can chat and you can exchange ideas and you can jam. And that's all we've ever done anyway when we write, is the band's jammed and I've had words up and maybe I've tinkled on the piano a bit or not. And I've sang and tried to hang these streams of consciousness on whatever was coming up in real time. Mike's been in the control room with the Pro Tools running, recording it all. And so in that sense, the process was the same, and the lockdown didn't really slow us down much. It just meant we were working without Steve. Mm. But a lot of the time, I mean, certainly in recent times, the last three or four albums, very, very much of the initial, of the music that's created the initial ideas has come from Mark. You know, from his peculiar take on playing the piano. Mike Hunter has probably said on this podcast that Mark's genius is for playing something that really isn't that complicated at all, that sounds really complicated, until you sit down and work out what he's doing. And quite often, it's not that strange, but it sort of sounds strange when you just hear it on its own. And he has the ability to pull those things out of the air and make you think, oh, I've never heard anything like this before. This is interesting. And so from my point of view, trying to come up with new things and hang words on things in different ways, he's really inspiring. And I think that had been true over quite a few albums. So not to take anything away from Steve, not having Steve around was not the end of the world, because Steve can always come, swan in at the end and blow two or three killer solos over the top of all of it. He doesn't necessarily need to be there at the get-go. I kind of do. Mm. Mark kind of does. It's always handy to have Pete and Ian in the room, because we do have a chemistry, there's no denying it, to get together when we all play, and you only really fully appreciate that if one of us is missing.
Yeah.
You know, I appreciated that. I mean, brilliant as Nick Beggs is, and a consummate pro and incredible player and great fun to be around, when we were rehearsing with him to go and do the cruise, he did an incredible job, but you're thinking, it's not Pete though, is it? You know, which of course it's not Pete, it's another human being. But when you're so used to working with another member of the band that's so integral to the creative process and the music, it's almost unfair to drop anyone else in to try and cope with that, because they're always just going to make different choices that perhaps aren't quite, you know, the runs or getting from one place to another, it just won't feel quite right. And we had that when Ian couldn't do the cruise years ago, and, you know, he was in for an operation, and we were auditioning drummers. We auditioned a load of great drummers. And, you know, in the end, we went with Leon from the Steve Rothery band, because he was the closest to being able to find Ian's feel. But it wasn't it, you know, and when you're used to it, you're it's nearly right.
It's just not quite.
I can't even tell him what it is because I don't know.
No.
You know, if I knew what it was, I'd tell him, but I can't.
The thing is, you could probably ask Pete, and Pete might not be able to tell you.
No, he probably couldn't.
You know, no. which is, I guess, the only thing you need to hear, really. Because ultimately, what that person does in the moment, subconsciously, is the bit that you've latched onto.
Yeah, and that's what makes us what we are. That, you know, we're a sort of chemical product of each of the five of us doing what comes naturally to us in the moment, whilst listening, you know, to what the others are doing, and trying to emote or bounce off what you're hearing, what you're feeling. And you take one of those elements out, it can still work, but it won't be quite the thing. So I digressed a little bit, but yeah, Brothers wasn't there, but he came at the end, and you know, he showed up at the end and did what he does. And so it felt like a different process, but I think looking back, it wasn't affected massively by really. We just carried on turning up for work as though there wasn't a pandemic, and got on with it.
Yeah, well, I mean, to a certain extent, you worked in a lockdown-friendly way anyway.
Yeah. So that didn't slow us down. What the pandemic did do for me particularly was give me a lot more to think about.
Mm. Yeah, because in terms of and we've chatted a little bit about this in the past as well. But you know, it's not a pandemic album in when you look at actually probably 50% of the lyrics. I mean, Crying the Nightingale isn't. Sierra Leone isn't.
No.
You know, yes, there's... I mean, An Hour Before It's Dark, absolutely, in terms of that sentiment, but that's a mortality question that still is still in the ether anyway, whether we talk about it through the lens of a pandemic or just talk about it as part of the ageing process.
Yeah, it's about mortality. It's about love, really. It's a love song as well. It's about... how your own mortality is affected internally by the people you love, and how our own feelings are shaped, and how, you know, when you think your life is under threat, the fear of that. It's not really so much, what about me? What am I going to do? I'm going to die. You think, what about the people I love? what will they do without me? And so I was holding up a mirror to that, I think, a little bit in care as well. You know, these are the days of flash before our eyes at the end. Some pure nostalgia, I guess. You remember in those moments where you felt completely alive, you know, the best moments of your life, you know, come trundling down the tube towards you. Or I imagine they do. As you live your final moments, because you're probably going to review your life, and all the best things that ever happened are going to come trickling down.
Including that jigsaw piece that you've just put in, that's going to be one of yours now, isn't it?
That's... No.
Frankly. Oh, it should do. It's taken long enough.
Actually, The Crow and the Nightingale was one of the oldest lyrics I had. Mm. And Sierra Leone was one of the newest. Mm. You know, I kind of dreamt up the whole idea of the man finding the diamond and the white sand and all of that, and the children on the beach. You know, really, that was brand new. That was a brand new thing. But The Crow had been around ever since I read Leonard's book, The Book of Longing, by Leonard Cohen. And I'd read that when Vibes was not much more than a blob, so a good 14 or 15 years ago, and written, you know, thank you for your words of longing. Doesn't really matter whether or not I understood them and all of that. Or where they take me, or how, you know, as long as they take me to where you take me, Len. Thanks, Len. I nearly just call it Thanks, Len, but that's not quite as poetic as The Crow and the Nightingale.
Well, it's got a certain innocent charm, but you're right, it's not quite. For those who can remember, we'd think it was What's-His-Face from Coronation Street. So, it's you know, exactly. That's the downside. And I never thought to ask before we started, did you have any more diary?
Yes, I think I do. I trotted out Nantes, didn't I?
You did trot out
last
Nantes.
Week. But before Nantes, I had a few bits and pieces. I had a bit of Paris and Utrecht. But I thought, because we talked so much about Nantes, I thought I'd put Nantes
in. You'd chick it in.
So we're going to go back 3 or 4 days to drive a day off in Paris, which was a driving day, to I think a day off in Utrecht and a Utrecht show day. So here it comes. October 24th, 2022, Paris. Packed and decided it might be a good idea if I went down to the car with the first bags, then returned for more. This proved to be somewhat complicated, as Lynetta's instructions to the car park were somewhat vague, and I found myself wandering round outside for a while before calling her to discover that it was in an underground car park below the hotel. Back inside and into the lift, more phone calls were made to try and work out which level the car was parked. Fortunately, Vibes remembered, and I eventually found it. Elle and the boys said they could manage the rest of the luggage, and the boys soon arrived with more bags, which we loaded into the car. The car park smelled vaguely of poo. Climbed inside the car where the air wasn't so whiffy, and waited for Lynetta, who took a while to show up. Then faffed around in the back, repacking and generally getting herself together for the journey, while I tried to remain patient. At the car park barrier, she couldn't remember what she'd done with the exit ticket, so we had to reverse back down the ramp and park again while she went to reception to sort it out. I did offer. Eventually, she returned and we were on our way. The Périphérique was a little slow, but not too bad. Elle drove while I chilled, pretty knackered after the shows. Shortly after, we reached a section of new motorway construction, which wasn't in our sat-nav, and everything went pear-shaped as we were redirected through the centre of Antwerp. Antwerp looked nice as we drove through the streets. Unfortunately, our route became utterly gridlocked in town, and we lost the best part of an hour. What Lynetta had confidently predicted to be a four-hour journey became a six-hour one as the approach road to Utrecht was similarly jammed as we arrived at rush hour. The Carlton Plaza Hotel is situated above a new development, and finding the car park also proved tricky. Elle had to call the hotel for instructions, whereupon a delightful girl called Fleur said, "Park where you are and I'll come down and lead you in." And she did. She showed us into the car park and then led the way up to level 2 where we parked. She then led us into the hotel and to reception where she checked us in and gave us room keys. Thanks, Fleur. Room 719 was at the end of the corridor, but was very nice, especially after the somewhat less luxurious Mercure in Paris. Everything was new and well thought out. Elle broke out the gin and tonic, and we called down to reception for 2 glasses of ice and slices of lime. The ubiquitous Fleur appeared with them and left with a smile. I mixed the drinks. Lynetta and I were both ready for a soda after the long drive. Went out for dinner with the boys. Being a creature of habit, I headed for the Oudijn Café on Oudegracht, but it was closed, so we retraced our steps and returned to the Pickles Burger Restaurant down the little alley called Zakendragersteeg. Dutch names are balmy. And we all had cheeseburgers. Creative, see?
It's what you get for being creative. Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard it said. Yeah.
shall we go back in?
Yes.
All right. Okay.
Yes. I'm on with another piece.
I know
now.
You are.
I'll try not to be distracted.
No, it's all right.
Be professional.
No, it's absolutely fine. It's fine. And we're back. And 3 more pieces, I think, have gone in. 3 pieces have gone in since we...
No, only one.
Only one.
But I've got my eye on a couple.
That was a hell of a cartwheel for just one piece.
I know, but you know.
It's impressive.
It's all relative.
Yeah, chucking some shapes.
Victories are relative, aren't they?
They are. You know what we haven't done as well this week? Well, we've done loads wrong this week. This is why we don't do it face to face.
What's happened?
Well, we haven't done a title yet. It's 204, isn't it?
Oh yeah, we haven't done that at all.
No, so we've got that to throw at some point.
It's slipping back.
It's,
hello,
I know, and it somehow feels wrong doing it this far in, but.
You know. No, I think it's good.
Do you think it's good? Should we leave it right to the end? Should we make it the last thing we say?
Absolutely.
Right, okay. So going back to, not going back to fear, because we've done that, going back to An Hour Before It's Dark, what do you think we should do next? So I think the same thing applies about we ought to get members from the band to come and talk a little bit about it. Do we get a person a song? We could do that. We could say, shall we get somebody to talk about da-da-da-da-da and do a song each week?
What I could farm it out and ask the boys to choose one. And so, you know, which one would you like to talk about?
That would be a really nice idea.
They can choose it themselves.
Now, the 6 tracks on the album.
If they all choose the same one, I'll say, no, you can't have
that. You can't have that. No.
Sort yourself out.
Yeah. So 6 tracks on the album,
which
I guess means that we need 6 people. That doesn't work because there's only 4 to go at. But then we've got Mike as well.
Well, there's 6 people, including Mike.
And
I can choose one. I mean, I've already talked a little bit about An Hour Before It's Dark. I've talked a bit about all of it, haven't I?
Yeah, well, I was thinking more that we'd get a band member's perspective on that particular tune and then we can all throw in again. So it means that they can actually decide that there's going to be one that nobody wants to talk about. So that'd be interesting to see which one it is.
Yes.
Yes,
we'll get someone else to talk about that.
Yeah.
Well, you can talk about it.
Well, yeah. Or SARS. SARS could come on. I can't call the car. Sarah could come on. You can call her SARS.
Yeah, she could if she wants.
Yeah, talk about the one that nobody else wants to talk about.
The one that got away.
Well, I think we should do that then.
It's a good idea.
Are you going to be fixed for doing that for next week?
Don't see why not.
Is that a possibility?
Yeah, I'll have a word with the chaps.
Right, okay. Well, I'll let you have a word with the chaps, and we'll see who we can get sorted for next week. And then the plan is, folks, that we will do 6 episodes, a track per episode, and we'll go into, we can get the lyrical thing behind it, because obviously young Stephen with a PH can do that bit, and then we'll get a band member perspective on the music and the recording part of it and all the other bits and chuck in a little bit of whatever.
Yeah.
And actually, that'd be nice because we can potentially get to hear from Pete and see how Pete's getting on.
Yeah, he's, well, to my knowledge, he's getting on really well, but it'd be lovely to hear it from the horse's mouth, wouldn't it?
It would be lovely to hear it from the horse's mouth. Well, bear in mind, we've done 50-odd minutes already and a bit of diary. I think we can call it a day there. So I'm going to call it a day by introducing the episode.
Very wise.
Okay, so hello and welcome to chapter 200. Actually, I'm going to do it again, aren't I? I'll do it again. This is why I don't do it at the end.
It's because I'm in the room.
It's because you're in the room.
You're better when I'm not there.
I'm better when you're not there. Hello and welcome to chapter 204 of the Corona Diaries.
He's right, you know. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Corona Diaries. It featured Steve Hogarth with the insights and me, Ant Short, with the questions. If you enjoyed the podcast, please consider subscribing and maybe leaving a review, as this will help others find it. You could even share with other like-minded souls, should the mood take you. This has been an A Short Stories production.